Hello again and welcome to I've Got a Beatles Podcast with Dave and Chris. And today we're going to go back into the lab under the microscope. It's been a while since we've looked at an early Beatles song. And I think, we've been focusing a lot on solo music lately and talking about a lot of the solo careers. But there's something kind of refreshing about going back to the heyday Beatlemania songs, and this one especially. We're going to talk about If I Fell, which was also a big part of the movie Hard Day's Night too. So I've always thought this is a gorgeous song that's really fascinating musically. What was your initial thoughts about If I Fell when we came up with this idea?
I've always liked it. I've always thought it sounds like tremendous. Whenever I hear it pop up in a rotation, or I'm listening to Hard Day's Night or something, I'm like, wow, it's amazing. Of course, you think about the harmonies.
Mm-hmm.
You think about this sort of stranger chord progression at the beginning. I'm sure we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
There is also a version on Live at BBC Volume 2 that's pretty pretty nice. And then, as I expected, the absolute bevy of cover versions
yeah.
of this. And why I wanted to bring that up right off the bat is, and we'll talk a little bit more towards the end of the episode about it, but there are so many instrumental cover versions of this. Even though it's a beautiful song, love song with beautiful lyrics, I found that to be interesting, that it's the music really that stands out the most.
Yeah. That's really a good, interesting point, because I think you mentioned the harmonies. I think that really lends itself. It's such a memorable tune. The melody is so strong, so well written, and especially when you put John and Paul together, it is just magic. My mother actually sent me, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, she said, before we even decided to do this, she sent someone on YouTube had extracted just the vocals, and just one of those parts where you just listen to the vocals, and she said, this is so beautiful. I said, yeah, this is John and Paul. You know, you've heard
that
too.
Yeah. I heard that version too, and if you notice, there's a Paul mistake.
Yes.
Like a Paul, where it was in vain the second
time. He cracks.
Time, he goes, was in vain. It doesn't quite get there, and it's in that way on the record.
Yep.
There's a mistake on the record, but it's still so great.
It is.
It's amazing.
It is. So it's for 2 minutes and 18 seconds or so, it's really beautifully put together. So a little demographics about the song, recorded, I believe, it one day. So it was recorded February 27th, 1964, EMI, and there were 15 takes. And so it says here in all the songs, talks about how right from the third take, George Martin suggested they add some drums. At the 11th take, John inserted his intro, and then the 15th take was the final one. So pretty impressive for one day's work, basically 15 times through it, and that was it. So and it was released.
I guess they released, or they had recorded several of those before they did the intro bit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Even though I guess the intro bit had been a part of the writing of a song, he thought, I don't know if it was just because they're like, okay, let's get a few down where we're practicing it.
Yeah, that would be good, interesting to hear the sessions.
Yeah.
That intro, is there, you can find it on YouTube. There is a demo of John singing it by himself, and he does have the intro in there. So there's some other parts that are changed a little bit, but it's pretty close to the regular song, so you could tell that was already there. Do you think this is kind of the Everly Brothers sound, or is this like, you know, because it is very much, they sing in musically we'd say homophonically, meaning together, they're not doing different rhythms, they're singing it absolutely together. So does it seem like that kind of model to you? Or
I guess a little bit, and it's interesting that it's not three part harmony, it's just two parts too. So they could very easily have, I'm sure, come up with a third part, but that chose not to.
Mm-hmm.
One would think, rather than it just being like, oh, we forgot.
Yeah, and then we'd be another This Boy or something. If you throw George in.
Exactly. So that's interesting. Yeah, I think maybe there is something there when comparing it to the Everly Brothers. Mm-hmm. I would say in a positive way.
Yes.
Not that I'm not the hugest Everly Brothers guy. I don't think anybody these days, this era, is like, oh man, all I do is sit around listening to Everly Brothers all day long.
No, they were certainly influential on the Beatles. So there's also, did you see any of the live versions? There was one.
Just the BBC one.
Yeah.
I didn't really dig too much into the live videos or anything, just because
there's so many covers.
I had my work cut out for me just listening to cover versions. Exhausting.
Yeah. Because I can't wait to hear about some of them, because just how hard this was. It was performed. There's one YouTube video of them performing it at the Indiana State Fair in 1964. And this is a hard song to sing. This is a really intricate song. And when you've got screaming around you, it's pretty impressive that they were able to play it. And they did play it quite a bit at Hollywood Bowl, BBC, and other venues in 64, 65. So pretty impressive. Just watching them. I read somewhere that said they started laughing, though, because they couldn't take it seriously. It was too... Well, you'll talk about the lyrics and stuff, but it was just a little too cloying, maybe, with the love sense of it. I don't know. But they would laugh in concert. So, but I don't know. It's cool to see that they performed this live. Like when we talked about You Can't Do That, or some of these songs you don't expect to see as much.
Now, instrumentation-wise, it's just sort of straightforward there, what you'd expect. However, musically, Dave, this is, you know, sometimes I want Dave to put his professor hat on.
Yeah.
Give me some stuff about the music here.
Well, it's the beginning is pretty stunning. The intro is, because the song is in the key of D major, but mm-hmm. it doesn't start there. It starts on D sharp minor, or E flat minor, however you want to think about it. If we're in a sharp key, we'd think D sharp minor, but D sharp minor, which is really not where you would expect to start, and it's in a minor chord, and it just slinks down. You can play them all with bar chords on the guitar, but moving down chromatically or by half step, and very unexpected resolutions. Walt Everett, who we've talked about a lot, music theorist who wrote The Beatles as Musicians, has a nice graph in here of all of the musical development and how complex it is. He's saying, and I don't know what you think of this, but the fact that the song is If I Fell, and mm-hmm. it's the if part, it's kind of uncertain. And so the fact that the music starts, so that intro is so far away from where the rest of the song is kind of a tentative... You know, the music sort of tentatively getting to there. I like that interpretation.
I like that interpretation. I also like that at times we're mixing a sad sound, like a minor key sound, with a happy sound. And this is a complicated kind of moment in this guy's thing, where it's like he's starting to fall in love with this girl. But, I mean, we'll get more into that when we talk about the lyrics. But I do think it matches the music matches the lyrics in its complexity.
Mm-hmm.
At first glance, you're like, it's just a love song. But when you really dig into it, it's really complicated.
Yeah. Harmonically, it really, really is. Yeah. And so you've got that intro, and then you think, where is this going? Where is this going to end up? Ends up in D major. The rest of the song itself is pretty straightforward in a typical AABA structure, which means a verse, a bridge and a verse, which is most popular songs. A lot of Beatles songs work that way. But you also have some classic Beatle chords in there, and you've got the G minor instead of a G major for the four chord gets in there. When he goes, da, 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 and I would be sad if our new love, that's a very Beatle-y thing to do. You've got a D major chord at the end of the verse, and then it goes to a D7 and moves into the bridge. I mean, it's just, for the times, I mean, it's really, really you can dig into it, into the harmony and the chords, as well as a beautiful melody. So it's a great specimen for a song. And you would think this is more of a Paul type thing, because we know Paul likes the music often comes a lot easier to Paul, but this is really a John, much more of a John song. Paul says they wrote it together. John said it was one of his. So here we go
Yeah.
again. What do you think? Where do you, is this?
I think it's mostly John with probably some Paul, like, oh, let's say this here, let's do that there. I'm sure they always were doing that a little bit back in these days.
Yeah,
But
definitely.
yeah, it's definitely a John, it sounds like John too because of the lyrics are more complicated about the love story that he's telling, and more naive in a way. So, which is perfectly encapsulates pre-Yoko John, like a little confused about the whole situation.
What gives it away in the lyrics that, because this is a love song, but it's also a complex, like a lot of those Beatles songs, I'll Be Back, or they're always a little more under the surface.
Yeah, and we talked about this before, and I think I'd given a something that was a bit of a misinterpret, because I was saying that this guy's like wanting assurances because he's leaving somebody, and that's not the case when you really dig into the lyrics here. So it sounds to me, I think he's had a heartbreaking breakup, probably his first, because it says, "I've been in love before, and it's more than just holding hands." So it's probably his first love is just broken up. And it seems like whatever broke that up was because he says, "Don't hurt my pride like her." That's a little confusing. So it seems like maybe she did something and then he broke it off. And it seems like it's so fresh that that happened that if he goes out with this new love, which he, when I talked about naively is kind of like confidence and like, yes, okay,
Yes, I'll
great.
never do anything wrong. Yeah.
But he keeps saying that she will cry when she finds we are two. So it's a very fresh, very complicated kind of like breakup that he just went through, and now he's like starting to fall for this other girl, and he's basically just scared. So if I'm this girl listening to this, you know what, buddy, you're not ready.
Gonna find somebody else. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's kind of probably doomed
Yeah.
already. Maybe
Yeah.
not. Maybe it works out between him and this fictional woman. But yeah, so it is a little more complicated than you first think as you're singing along to it. You don't really dig into that kind of like, which I find like great.
Yeah,
It's
much more.
fantastic to have a love song that's like at a very specific point,
Right.
of somebody's the ups and downs of romances and things like that.
More realistic, or more, I don't know, autobiographical, or kind of just something that we all go through. In that,
Yeah.
I'm struck also songs that begin with if. Remember, we talked about in our Rubber Soul deep dive, we got into If I Needed Someone. So from the next year with George, that's another one that's kind of, well, if I needed some, it's a little hesitant. There's
Yeah.
some doubts there, and
Exactly.
they're love songs, but there's more to it than that. It's not just a she loves you or I want to hold. Well, even I don't know. There's not really any Beatles song love songs that are just completely banal, are there? I don't know. There may be
Love
songs.
me do,
Okay,
maybe?
yeah, that that all right. That's a good. That's a good one. We'll give you that. So
Yeah.
lyrically, yeah, there's a little bit of question there of what to think.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a complicated, like we were saying, it's a complicated emotion, and a naive guy too, like somebody who's younger and not quite, doesn't have it all together, not a confident like really when you it should be starting relationships is not when you're like desperate and just out of a relationship
no.
and sort of like tentative about getting into a new one.
No.
That's not when you should be getting yourself to feeling great on your own and really confident and then meet somebody else who's really confident.
Yeah.
And then it'll work out. It shouldn't be
yeah,
like,
not no, no, definitely.
If we get together, just so you know, this other girl's gonna cry about it and that's gonna break my heart because I'm still in love with her kind of.
But I promise me you'll be true.
Yeah, as long as you can guarantee this will work out.
Yeah. No, not good. And I think that, you know, going back to the Walt Everett, with the interpretation of the music and the text together, thinking about mm-hmm. what all of what you just said there, when that minor chord, I mentioned that Beatley, and it turns into a minor chord. Ooh, well, that could be. I mean, there's a darkness and a minor, and a sadness and a minor sound, maybe, that it's kind of giving a little cloud coming
would
in.
Be sad if our new love was in vain.
Exactly.
It's like, and that's ooh, what he says. So it's yeah. sort of like, it's almost like he's like dooming this into
yeah.
a failure before it even starts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, so. Exactly. So pretty great song musically and certainly lyrically for one of these songs that may have been probably written pretty quickly. But it's, yeah, I think it does stand very well. Now, the crackling, I always hear that. I didn't know that when Paul does the voice crackling, it's only on the stereo version. And
oh.
So I didn't know that until I heard the mono version of it, and it's not there. So the results...
Interesting.
Yeah, so in the stereo version, you can hear the cracking. So that
when
was
he
something.
Goes, was in vain.
Yeah, was in
time.
Vain!
Yeah.
And I wait for it every time. And
you
then...
can definitely hear it on that isolated vocal.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
That's the way to do it. You'll. Well, then you'll never unhear it. So
no.
Be fair warned.
Something neat about the Beatles is that they, and a lot of groups of that time, is that those are still there, and you can still hear them. Now everything's so perfect. It's a different
exactly
different
yeah.
thing. Although
well,
I will
that,
say,
what was that one song where I blasted it because he even sings the wrong word?
Yeah.
Every little thing, maybe.
Yeah, one of those on Beatles for Sale. I think that there's a complete botch in there. And then when you watch the movie Hard Day's Night, this they do a mimed performance of this too, and it's a great one. They're sitting. It's their rehearsal. It's
every
the...
time they mime, they don't quite have their instruments home,
no,
right?
No, no. John's lazy. Guitar is like looking to the sky. It's... and it's not great miming, but it was at the rehearsal before the big concert at the towards the end before they when they couldn't find Grandpa and all of that. But they they do a run through of it. And it sounds, it looks great just to watch them.
Looks and sounds wonderful, mm-hmm. of course. So,
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, as you already mentioned, alluded to, there's a ton of cover versions. I know of one, and I'm sure you'll mention it because it's famous, but let's dig in here. And what did you find?
Well, there's so many cover versions, Dave. It's like overwhelming.
Yeah.
I listen to a lot of them. And quite frankly, for having so many cover versions, hardly anybody's doing anything all that wild and out of the ordinary. Some of the notable ones here. Lou Christie, remember Lightning Strike
yes.
Again?
Yeah, he was a big singer in the late 60s. Yeah.
Well, imagine him not singing five octaves too high, and you'll kind of be right. So it's a little bit of a dull version there.
Yeah.
Roberta Flack, a late career Roberta Flack too.
Hmm.
That one's pretty good. That one I'd recommend give it a listen.
Mm-hmm.
Dave's a huge Maroon 5 fan, right?
I got everything of theirs. Yeah.
I was in the other room and I was like, who's this girl singing? And it was because he sings pretty high, you know,
mm-hmm.
if you've ever heard If You Will Be Love or whatever
yeah.
that song is.
Yeah.
So yeah, not too bad. Just an acoustic version with Adam Levine. That's
yeah.
right. Singing it. So, and you know, he's got a good voice.
Yeah,
so definitely good.
We'll put these into a Spotify list if you want to check out some of the covers like we usually do.
Reba?
Reba McEntire?
That's right.
No, I did not know she did anything, did this
Yeah,
song.
there's a Reba version. Pretty good, pretty solid. Two of my favorites, Keeley Smith. That was the very first. It's the Keeley Smith Singers, and that was the very first cover listed of this. There's a good website we've mentioned before that's just called secondhandsongs.com. And the Keeley Smith, the recording in 1964. So a lot of other weird, like Poco Seco singers and Los Diablos Negros and Reparata and the Deltrons and Teddy Robin and the Playboys and all kinds of weird sounding ones. But the other one, Peter and Gordon.
Yes.
And now the
Yes.
Peter and Gordon one is probably a little more interesting musically, because it's got like these dramatic sort of drums at the beginning, and then when they start singing the main song, an oboe comes in, and a lot of oboe, a real oboe heavy kind of stuff. So that's a lot of the regular with vocal ones. Rita Lee was one more I failed to mention, and then
I was
there's
wondering
instrumental
if I
ones.
could pop in here. One other
Yep.
one that I remember was from a movie that we'll have to talk about at some point. I know a lot of people have
Oh
requested
yes.
the Evan Rachel Wood performance of it from Across the Universe.
That's right. That is true.
Yeah.
Across the Universe. Yep.
We'll talk
Definitely.
about it someday.
Evan Rachel Wood. It is a standout point of the film and her singing on her own. She has a decent voice, movie that I despise, but that she's
We'll get
I
there.
like her as an actress though. She's
Yeah,
pretty
she's good.
great. Okay, now it just if you're on Secondhand Songs and you scroll down, there's a whole big section that's just versions, and then there's a whole section of instrumental versions, amongst of which of note, George Martin and his orchestra.
Oh,
Jerry Mulligan, you know Jerry
yes,
Mulligan,
of
of course.
course.
Yep. Yep. Al DiMeola, you know, remember
Great
Al
guitar player,
DiMeola, great
yeah.
guitar player. Probably the best overall, if I have to say one thing is the best of all of these, Chet Atkins.
Ooh, I've never heard that one.
Love Chet Atkins. I've got several Chet Atkins records. Very, very great guitarist. So check that one out for sure.
Yeah.
And then of course this list would be very, very empty without Lawrence Juber.
Oh, LJ.
LJ on his the relatively recent instrumental version of it. So pretty good. Pretty good Lawrence Juber version of If I Fell. But yeah, it's kind of harder now to like it was used to be fun to play them and then la
Yeah,
laugh at a few of the worst ones.
I know.
But there was a lot of just like I didn't find any that was just like, oh man, this is a train wreck.
No Bill Cosby versions
Yeah, that's right.
or whoever those awful William Shatner.
Yeah, and there's just so many. It was even difficult for me with all my free time to doing nothing else in my life
Sift through them.
sit through all of them. So
Well, why do you think, as a kind of wrap up our look here, why do you think this song has it lends itself to being covered so much compared to other ones? Because it's still a love song that, I mean, the Beatles have so many love songs, but they don't get covered quite as much. What is it? What's the secret to this one, do you think?
I think it's just the beauty of the melody over anything else. And then anytime, one other one we didn't mention was Mary Hopkins.
Oh, yes.
This was a live performance, and her husband Tony Visconti, who I've been reading a Bowie book and just bought two Bowie box sets. So I've been deeply steeped in Tony Visconti. With Tony Visconti singing on that track, but Mary Hopkin sounds pretty good in it. Yeah, that's a good example. They're just like, oh, this is a great chance for us to do a two-part harmony
Right,
that's
right.
very beautiful. So there's that, and then It's just a real musically interesting tune.
Yeah, I agree. I was thinking wouldn't even mind like Simon and Garfunkel could have done this back in the day. That would have been really great to hear Art on the high part and Paul on the lower part. And
Yeah.
I think that would, yeah, just any duo who has good voices would,
Hall and Oates.
yeah,
Let's get a
Hall &
Hall and
Oates. Let's
Oates
do a little
version.
Hall & Oates version. Yeah,
Yep. They could
but
still do a Hall
they
and Oates
could,
version. They're
they
still
could.
touring. Well, nobody's touring right now.
No, sadly, but well written, well produced, well put together song, and we're big fans of it. I think it's a great tune to look
Yeah,
at.
where would you list it in the Beatles tunes? Like the top, like
I'd
is it in your top 50?
say so. Yeah, I would say so. Because
Sure.
if I'm thinking, if you're gonna pick early songs that are musically interesting, lyrically interesting, and also got a lot of exposure because of the movie, I think so. And the I think the fact that there's so many cover versions speaks to that too, that it has a certain draw, and it
Yeah.
should be in the top 50 maybe. Yeah. How about you? Would you put it up there or a little
Oh
lower?
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
I think it's a fantastic, and we didn't even talk about the rest of the band or anything like that. It
Oh,
just like
right.
the lick
Yes.
that's being played. This
Yeah. How could
is
we
just like
forget George Harrison's 12-string Rickenbacker too? That's the
yes.
big rich sound of it. Yeah.
Exactly, and it sounds just absolutely pristine on this. I gotta check that what you were talking about between the mono and the stereo. I
Yeah.
didn't really catch that, so it's a good to check it out. So,
Yeah,
but
yeah.
yeah, I love it. I think it's one of their better tunes. I'm not quite gonna. I mean, it's hard to off the top of your head rank,
Yeah, no, but it's certainly
but.
a highlight and a high
Yeah.
point in the early days.
For
So,
sure.
well, very
Yeah, it's
good.
nice to do an early tune,
It
huh?
is. It's fun to go back to these, and as we will be now.
Speaking of early days.
Yes, I. Yes, we are. We've now we you know last before we released our last episode, we kind of mapped out the rest of the year with the rest of our episodes that we're going to record. But now we've had a wrench thrown in it because of the news that just came out of December 11th's release of McCartney 3. So
Right.
you can guarantee we'll be recording an episode on that, and that's kind of changed our plan a little bit. But I'm pretty excited about it. I am not a big fan of the marketing so far with it. I think we talked about this a little, but
Yeah, I like the design and the whole dice and all
yeah.
that kind of thing. I like that,
Yeah.
but this idea to put out like 12 different color vinyl versions and certain like local record stores have white versions, and if you buy it at Target you got a green exclusive to Target version and all that, and all of these are like sold out like
Instantly,
immediately
yeah.
instantly, so you are like either you are it's like worse than there's fear of missing out. Well, what about the sensation of missing out on something that you never even had a chance to get?
That's true.
Because that's what most people are feeling with it. Like you, as soon as you see the announcement and click the link, it
Yeah.
says sold out, so you
Yeah.
can't buy it. So now you're feeling bad about something you could have just not known about.
Yeah,
You could have
right.
just like not been introduced, or they could just put out what's wrong with like people just putting out one version of something?
I know.
Why do we have to have like 50 different colored versions of stuff? And
Marketing, huh?
certain collectors are gonna like run around, and then I guess that's their business, but they're gonna run around trying to get all of these, and it's
Yeah.
impossible.
Yeah. I know, 'cause especially when it comes for us, it really comes down to, well, what's on the album? We want to know
Yeah.
what's the music like? How's it sound? And think about it. This is different than Egypt Station, where he he dropped some tunes first, and so we didn't even know about the Travelers and the Explorers and all of that. That all came later. We already heard the album, but
Yeah.
we just added a couple songs. But here we haven't heard a song from the album yet
I'm
to
gonna
really know.
guess that we will get one before the album comes out. Like, we'll get one in a couple of weeks or something, and then that'll be a continued part of the marketing. Because I feel like they do that now. They like have the album. Usually they have the album announcement and they release one song at that point, and then a couple weeks later they might release a second song or a video or something like that. Maybe there is a video or a song coming, but I kind of think with McCartney 3 there might be just a mystery. Like, just keep that mystery up and then release the album and then let her rip.
Yeah, I think that probably might make more sense, especially in the way, given the way the world is right now, and just the kind of uncertainty of things, that might be the way to go. Keep everybody waiting. I don't know. I'm interested, though. I read there was an interview in some kind of offbeat magazine I've never heard of, where they did an interview with Paul talking about it, and he had some, useful things to say and explained how it came about and how he recorded it, and there's actually some fragments from older songs and some things lying around. He didn't plan to do this and just kind of came together. So yeah, it was a great picture. Mary, his daughter, took a really great picture of him with all his guitars and sitting there. It looked very, very cool picture.
Of course, isn't it Mary in the jacket and on the back cover of McCartney 1, which I now have the McCartney 1 Half Speed Master.
That's right, yeah.
Which sounds really great. So yeah. Was happy to get my hands on one of those. But
yeah,
I'm excited, very, very excited. Also, maybe just a slightly trepidatious, as this is Paul doing his own thing. Will it be more McCartney 1 or will it be more McCartney 2?
Yeah. The indulgence.
Sure.
Yeah.
Maybe does he need Ryan Tedder to get a great song out of him these days or not? Maybe these will be really great. So I'm excited, looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit nervous that it won't be as great as we think, but hey, great idea.
We'll take it. Yeah, and
we'll take it. This should be McCartney, what, 6?
Yeah, by this point.
Yeah, because it's 70, 80,
every decade.
Yeah, he didn't do 90, 2000, 2010.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this should be McCartney 6, but we're happy we got at least McCartney 3.
Anyway, something in the midst of our mutual lousy situation in the world right now, something to look forward to, a bright spot to at least look forward to hearing in a couple months. So.
For sure. For sure.
Well, good deal.
Go out and listen to the Adrian Belew version of If I Fell. I mentioned Adrian Belew, the guitarist that is not, for some reason, sings If I Fell. Not that great.
An alum of the Mothers of Invention with Frank Zappa. So.
Yeah. And King Crimson.
And King Crimson. Yeah, yeah.
Overrated King Crimson.
I'll put together some of the choice versions for you on our Spotify list to check out, and you can enjoy digging into If I Fell, a great tune from 1964. So, well, we'll be back at you soon with another episode. And in the meantime, stay safe, and we'll talk to you soon.